Okay, personally, I've heard this gentleman, and he's a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're very fortunate to have him here to speak for us. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Rick W. from Oxnard.
Hey, Rick.
The hell is this?
We have a Robin Rodder right here.
There's not a hook on the end, so. Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Wilson. I'm an alcoholic from Oxnard. Woo woo, yeah. Where the hell's Visalia? Isn't that like, I don't know where. But Oxnard, Bakersfield. Oh, that brings up. What's Santa Maria? Santa Maria's got to have a tag name, you know? Santa Barbara is, I think, the American Riviera. Are they all American City? That's very nice for a time. How you doing?
All American City.
Nice. I thought it would be like almost Guadalupe, no? And the Oxnard is, you brought it up, excuse me, Oxnard's motto is Bakersfield by the Sea.
Sorry.
That doesn't go over very well in Bakersfield. Actually, it doesn't go over very well in Oxnard either. I was born in a town in Massachusetts called Lynn, and the motto there was, and anybody there from here from Massachusetts? It's Lynn, the city of sin, you never come out the way you went in. So that was my trauma in bringing up. And congratulations on 37 years. It's a good start. Just ask the guy next week, you know. Long-term sobriety. I mean, it's... I don't know if it's all it's cracked up to be, you know, really. I was speaking at a meeting in San Diego, and there was four of us in the car, and we had a mathematician in the back seat. He said, and we were almost to San Diego before he came up with this, though. He said, do you know that we have over 125 years of sobriety in this car? Isn't that great? And I thought, no. What that means is you got four old people in the car. I didn't say people. But I think I told you my name's Rick. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I say so, and there's nothing you can do about it. As a matter of fact, I like to say that I love you all. I really do love you all. I don't like all of you, but I love you all. And there's nothing you can do about that either, you know. My introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous was in a mental institution. And, that was a pretty good thing for me. I got to the age of 26. I don't know when my first drink was. And I'm not even really sure when my last drink was. It was sometime in July. I know that because they had the 4th of July, right? They had it back then, too. It was the same day. But by that time, I had gotten to the point where I was contemplating suicide. And it wasn't like, maybe I'll start the car up in the garage, because I didn't have a garage. I did have a car, but I didn't have a garage. And I'll leave a note, and hopefully they'll find me. You know, they get home at 4 o'clock, I'll get out there about 3:45. And there was nobody to leave a note to, you know. My life had gotten to the point, my life sucks so bad that it wasn't worth living anymore. And I had said somewhere along the line that I wasn't going to live past 25. I don't know where that came from. I just, you know, I was a product of the 60s. And I just, you know, Jimi Hendrix. Some of you remember Jimi Hendrix? He had a song and he said, I know I'm going to die when it's my turn to die. So why don't you let me live my life the way I want to? And then I realized he had been dead for about 3 years when I brought that up. So so my models, you know, I didn't role models were. But I for some reason, I thought I was going to live till I was, I was going to live till I was 25. And not one day I woke up, but I happened to be 26 at the time. And I realized that I'd lived a year past my expiration date. And I like to be able to tell you that I was, it was a good thing, you know, that life was going well, and but it wasn't. There was six of us living in a one-bedroom apartment down in Burbank, and there was nobody to write a suicide note to, you know. Nobody would miss me, you know. They would just say, oh, you know, we got the couch is open, or that couch is open, or something, you know what I mean? It would be like, it would be just like another day at Burbank, you know. And so I was trying to get, I wanted to commit suicide, and I had a couple there was a couple of caveats that I wanted with it, you know. One of it that I wanted it to be painless, because I'm a chicken, you know. And I figured with drugs I could do that. And the other one is, that I wanted it to be temporary. And you know what I mean? Because I'm committed, but you know the difference between involvement and commitment? Now, there's some people involved in this meeting, and there's some people committed to this meeting. I'm interested in this. How many people were for the change of the room? By the way, I think it's a pretty good idea, you know? But I tried that in my home group down in Oxnard. And we didn't ask anybody. We didn't say, hey, we're thinking about changing the chairs. What happened was people were standing up, and the room was just set up poorly, you know? It was okay when there was 40, 50 people, not as 60, 70 people going to this meeting. So we just decided, hey, you know what we can do? We can put some chairs over there. People flipped up. They flipped out. It was really weird. But anyways, so where was I? I got a good memory. It's really short. So if you can figure out the word that I was looking for, please just throw it out, and I'm okay with that. I was going to commit suicide. I was 26 years old, and I was going to, it just wasn't worth living anymore. You know, it just wasn't worth living anymore, you know. Like I said, there were six of us living in a one-bedroom apartment in Burbank, and, you know, life was, it was tough, you know. And then somebody told me, hey, if you get certified crazy, you can collect SSI. And SSI is a check from the government, the beginning of the month, and I thought, wouldn't that be, I mean, it's not my problem, but it wouldn't hurt, right? So if I could get up, I always worked, you know, because I'm self-provider here, you know. I mean, I didn't have a credit bother with careers, because when you're going to live to 25, you don't necessarily want to spend 8 years in school being something, you know what I mean? So I went to high school for 4 years, and I quit my sophomore year. But it happened, and back then, that was a while ago, right? So back, it was in the 70s. And having $1,000 or whatever it was a month, you know, coming in at the first of the month for nothing, just for being crazy, I can do that, you know? And so I checked into Camarillo State Hospital. Anybody remember Camarillo?
Yes.
I know, you got a Tascadero up here. What year? No, I'm just kidding. It's a university now, though. They've changed it from a mental institution to a university. My resume looks much better because of that. But thank you for catching up. Need a bottle of ketchup or something here. So I checked into Camarillo State Hospital to get certified crazy, and they made a mistake. And they put me on Unit 14, which was an alcohol abuse program. Now, I got to tell you, up to that point in my life, I have never heard the words, at least pointed at me, that I was an alcoholic. Because I knew one thing for sure. This is, I knew right down to my toes, is that I was not an alcoholic. Because I knew what an alcoholic is. Don't read this up here. I know what an alcoholic is. An alcoholic is my dad. And I ain't never going to be like him. I made that decision years ago. And so, don't confuse me with the facts. I'm not an alcoholic. And I walked in there, and there was a nice young lady sitting there, and I said, hi, my name's Rick, and I'm not an alcoholic. And she said, well, what are you doing here? And I thought, boy, I'm being rejected in a mental institution. Not only did my life suck, but it was getting worse, you know? I don't even know if you can do this anymore. Back then, there was a lot of mental institutions around that you could check into. And but back then, they didn't have the checks waiting for you. They didn't have a check saying, "Hey, Rick." And back then, you could remember you could smoke in institutions. You could smoke in AA meetings. As a matter of fact, I think it was mandatory. Right? Because if you didn't smoke incessantly and or chain smoke cigarettes and drink coffee incessantly, we'd say, "Hey, maybe you're not an alcoholic." You know? And right now it'd be the smoke level would be, and I enjoy being down here, but you know the smoke level. Would be, as a matter of fact, you can still see the smoke ring, right? And I didn't have money, and they didn't give me the check for a while. You actually have to apply for them. You have to earn it, right? Which I thought was rude. And but they did. They were kind, and they gave me Bugler and decaf coffee, because they don't give crazy people caffeinated coffee. But they do in AA.
You don't need this one.
Thank you very much. I'll drink to that. Anyways, they do in AA. They give crazy people caffeinated coffee. I was given a cup of caffeinated coffee tonight. So that just proves the fact. In fact, they do in AA give crazy people coffee. But so I was rolling Bugler and drinking decaf coffee. Remember Folgers crystals, right? And they wouldn't give us hot water because, you know, we're crazy. And so they'd give us warm water and Folgers crystals, and it wouldn't mix well. It would get that crap on the top, you know. Now they call it crema over at Starbucks, right? And I couldn't roll a joint, and I couldn't roll Bugler, and I'm smoking Bugler and spitting out the tobacco. And somebody said on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they have AA meetings. And they have caffeinated coffee in there. And they have cookies. And they would bring in filter tip cigarettes. I said, "Whoa, I might join up to this American Airlines or whatever the hell it is." Because I don't know nothing about alcoholics, and I've never been. I've never been told to go. And it's unusual because I've got at least a half a dozen drunk drivings. I mean, some of them were back, you know. My last one was really expensive. It was it's $225. I know. Don't feel bad for me, but or 10 days in L.A. County Jail. I went to L.A. County Jail for 10 days for $225. I wouldn't recommend that. I wish I had a sponsor then. Anyways, I really am an alcoholic. I really am an alcoholic. I really am. You know, I started drinking. My dad was a town drunk, and it wasn't nice in my house. It, you know, there was 9 kids, and the 7 of us made it out alive, and my dad was the town drunk, I already said that, and he treated the neighborhood really nice, and he treated us like crap. You know, me and my brothers and sisters and my mom. And that's why very early I recognized what an alcoholic was and why I wasn't going to be one. And I remember I finally got the courage to be able to stand up to him when I was about 16, and I pulled a knife on him, and I said, "Go ahead, hit her one more. Just hit her one more time, you know. Just give me a reason to do this." And I could go on and on about growing up in an alcoholic family, but if you grew up in an alcoholic family, you know what I'm talking about. And if you didn't, I don't know if I can explain it to you. Like Ricky said to Lucy, you remember? Ricky said to Lucy, "You need another one?"
No.
Like Ricky said to Lucy, "I can explain it to you, but I can't understood it for you." And that's really the truth about that, is that the ugliness that happened in my home, you know, I wasn't proud of. And as a result of it, I was, you know, a scared little boy, insecure. And I was a bedwetter and a thumb sucker. And I've been dry for years now, but back then going to school, I couldn't look at anybody in the eye, you know. I was ashamed. I was one of those damn Wilson boys. If you grew up in the town that I grew up in, it was a small town, you were instructed by your folks not to hang around with me. And they'd say something like, I told you not to hang around those damn Wilson boys, you know? And I'd be standing right there, you know? And I'm sensitive, you know? I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, but it was good advice, you know, because I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief, not because I'm an alcoholic, because I wasn't an alcoholic back then. I wasn't born an alcoholic. But when I started drinking, an alcoholic was born, I can tell you that. But back then, when I was 5 and 6 years old, you know, it's hard to get liquor, you know. I didn't even know what it would do for me, you know. But I do know this, that when I went to school, I couldn't look at anybody in the eye, because if we just had that much eye contact that you could see into my soul. And God, I didn't want anybody in there. It was dark, and I was ashamed of who I was and what I was doing. And I was just as ashamed of the things that I wasn't able to do, like protect my mom from my dad. And because I can remember many nights laying in bed and have, you know, hear her crying downstairs, calling my name, you know, and there was nothing I could do, you know. And so I couldn't look at you in the eye. This is how I walked around. And then one day in the ballpark, a buddy of mine and I got some whiskey and Pepsi, And I agree with what you say. You don't want to water it down, but in the beginning, it's really tough, you know, here to drink a shot of straight whiskey out of a bottle or whatever, you know. And I got more about that later. But anyways, in the ballpark, I finally got some of this poison down in me, and I can remember my shoulders relaxing, you know, and I could feel it going down into my body, and my, you know, the blood went to the end of my fingers and my shoulders relaxed, and I took a deep breath, and God, it made me feel 5'7" tall, you know? It was just so reassuring, you know? But one of the things that happened that nobody else saw, except for me, and for me, the thing that changed my life, it was my eyes went from here to here, and I was able to look at you in the eye. For the first time, and not forever, but for a long time. And I thought, this is pretty good. How you doing, man? How you doing? It's good to see you. What's up? What's up? Then I took another drink. One is good, right? I don't know what two is going to do, but I took another drink, and I thought, how you doing? And then I took another drink, and I thought, what the hell are you looking at? It changed me. And not one time in my life, from that day to this day, have I ever tried to quit drinking. It just hasn't happened. Why would you give up something like that? It was pure gold. It was life-sustaining. You know what? I used to say that it made me feel okay. Now, that doesn't sound like much unless you don't feel okay. Just like oxygen, you don't think. How many people have thought of air since they walked into the room? But let's take the air out of the room, and that's the most important thing all of a sudden, right? And air is a cool thing to have. I scuba dive, and air is important, you know. Learned how to do that, so... So that's how alcohol started for me. I don't know if I can go all the way to 9:15, but some of you out there thinking, oh yeah, you can. But we're going to have to take it to a coffee shop afterwards. But I'm going to tell you a couple of things, because I like to work the steps. Are there steps on the wall right there? The steps on the wall, because that's what I like. I am a kind, wonderful, amazing human being with an interesting story. But you really don't give a crap, right? You really don't, you know? But I think the reason why I come to meetings is I want to know that it works. Somebody said one of the promises is that you won't have to drink anymore. And if that was just it, if that was the only thing, it wouldn't be enough. You know, or it isn't enough, or I don't even have to say that, because there's so many more things that you'll get out of working the steps. And I think that that's what I need to do is hopefully, because my primary purpose today is to stay sober, and that's kind of a, you know, in July, I celebrated 39 years of sobriety. And so that means next year I'll be 40 years sober, right? And then, believe it or not, the year after that, I'll be 41. No, okay. But I think that the message is that I need to stay sober, but I also want you to know that you can stay sober, too, through a set of simple principles over there. And I got some good news for you. We'll get to that in a minute. But I want to prove to you that I'm an alcoholic, so I'm going to tell you two stories. And I always tell these same two stories because I'm simple and I think these show something. Whiskey is good. I'd rather drink whiskey than beer. I'll drink beer, and I'll drink wine, but I'd rather drink whiskey. But whiskey is more expensive. But less input, less output, right? The less time I have to spend in the bathroom. When I drink a coffee this big on the way up here, the first thing I need to do is go to the bathroom. And then I just go to the bathroom, right? The less time I spend in the bathroom, or the more time I the more liquid I put in me, I guess this is kind of, you probably knew this before I got here. Anyways, less input, less output. We'll leave it at that, right? And the reason is that when I was in the bathroom, when I came out, it was always this way. Oh man, you missed it, you know? And I didn't want to miss anything. And so that's why I'm a designated driver. If we're drinking, I'm driving. You know what I mean? Because I don't trust you, and I'm a pretty good driver, you know, when I'm all relaxed and shit. And so I don't want to miss anything. So less input, less output. But if you don't have, you know, back then, you know, I was employed. I don't know if I was gainfully employed, but I was employed. And in between paychecks, because they used to pay us like every 2 weeks and literally live paycheck to paycheck and not even sometimes. But so in between paychecks, I would drink sweet wine and, you know, the good stuff, you know, like Spinata, you know? I mean, not like Boone's Farm, unless that's all I had, and then Boone's Farm. Boone's Farm apple wine. Do they still make that? Like none of you know, sure. Do you know that it's not really apple wine? It's just made near an apple orchard, so they call it apple wine. Anyways, when I drink this stuff, this sweet wine, it has a loosening effect on my bowels. So more input, more output, you know, and so I spend time in there. So one day I'm driving down the street, and like I said, I'd rather drink whiskey, and I have a water glass, or an iced tea glass. Those of you, anybody from back east knows what I mean. It's an iced tea glass. It's a big old thing. And I've got it in between my legs, and I'm driving. You know, I apparently just left the liquor store and got this thing in. I don't know where I got the ice, but anyways, I'm driving down the street. I got the bottle under the seat and the glass between my legs. And I'm trying to muscle this stuff down, but it doesn't go down easy at first. You know, you just got it. Makes me want to throw up. And I'm not going to, you know what I mean? I don't want to miss it because I don't want to get there late. I don't want to be late, you know? It's always happening, not here, by the way. It's always happening, you know, if we go to Broadway or to, you know, wherever. Guadalupe, I think there's a party going on in Guadalupe. And they're giving it away, you know, so let's go, you know? And then I leave and it's happening here. So anyways, that's the story of my life. But I'm driving down the street and I'm drinking this whiskey and I have to throw up and I think, oh my God. And so I get to the side of the road, thank God, but I don't get the door open and I throw up. And I think this, has anybody ever fallen down the stairs or gone over the handlebars with their bike? You notice how time slows down? I remember distinctly, I was riding my bike out in the mountains and I hit a rock and I was going over the handlebars. And I'm thinking, oh crap. This is gonna hurt. And it did, by the way. And I went over the handlebars, but everything just seems to slow down. So here I am sitting in the car, and I have to throw up. I don't have the window open or the door open yet. And I'm thinking, hey, Rick, how about you put your hand over your mouth? Oh, yeah. I do. Oh. Which doesn't really help, you know. Because projectile vomiting, yeah, it went all over, it came, you know, like all over, it came out of every hole in my head. There's tubes to all these places, you know. As I threw, it came out of my ears and my eyes and all over the inside of, you know, all over me, all over the inside of the car. And as I was sitting there, you know, as that happened, I also filled my pants with the Boone's Farm apple wine. So it was kind of a disgusting spot to be in, you know. And I'm sitting there, and I'd like to be able to tell you from that day to this that I was mortified, that I was just horrified. I mean, how disgusting. And it's never happened to me. Well, that's never happened to me again, but that I never drank again. I'd love to be able to tell you that, but it wouldn't be the truth. You know, I was inconvenienced. I was delayed is what happened. And so I'm sitting there in all this glory, right? And I don't know what to do, so I turn on the windshield wipers, which has no effect because it's all on the inside. I have to scrape it down. I drive home. I hose out the car, change my clothes. Hopefully I took a shower, and then I was back on the road. Mad that I was going to be late. Now that I was going to be late, you know what I mean? And so that's some of the fun that I gave up when I gave up drinking. The other time I was asleep, and that, when I woke up, I was actually driving down the street, which is pretty exciting in itself. And I bring up the high school thing because I want you to know that, you know, because I quit high school in my fourth year, in my sophomore year, doesn't make me stupid. It makes me uneducated, right? And so that will play into this in a minute. So I wake up and I'm driving down the street, and I thought, geez, you could be in an accident. And instantaneously I was. I hit a parked car. And now I'm driving a getaway car because I have to get away because I don't have a license because I've already dropped for drunk driving. The good news is it's not my car, you know, but, so that's okay. So now I'm driving away. And when I'm drunk, how long it is, but shortly after this happens, I realize that my chest is sore because I've broken the steering wheel, that I've knocked out my front teeth, and that I put my head through the windshield and lost some of my hair, which was really, I don't know which was worse, the teeth or the hair. No, I'd already gotten through that. And the car was in worse shape than me. So it made it about a half a block, and it's died. So now I get out, and I'm thinking, okay, it's not my car, they can't get me. I throw, you know, open the door, throw down the keys, and I start to run. What I didn't know was that there was a cop behind me, and he witnessed the whole thing. Excuse me. And you know those little squawk boxes that they have? He said over the squawk box the words that I've always hated to hear from cops. He said, "Hey, Rick." So he knew me, you know, and I realized that even if I did get away, it was for naught. So I threw my hands up in the air, you know, because I'm not one of the ones to argue with cops or tell them that I... Anyways, we'll leave that alone. I'm not one of the guys who, you know, who just argues with cops. I'm a yes sir, no sir thing. So I threw up my hands and I thought, you know, thinking while he was on his way over to see me, what could I have done differently? And the first thought that came to my mind was... Rick, if you weren't drinking, this wouldn't have happened. And the second thought that came to my mind was, if this is the price that I got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, I'm in. I gotta have alcohol. You know that. You know you gotta have it. I gotta have it, right? I gotta have it. And if this is the price, there's a price to pay. And if this is the price that I got to pay, then I'm in. And it didn't happen. You know, I didn't smash up a car every time I drank. It only happened 2, 3, maybe 4 times a year. You know? But if this is the price that I got to pay, I'm doing it, you know? And I don't know how old I was. I was 18, 19 years old. It didn't matter. Anyways, through a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings, I ended up in California. I have a sister who lives in the Valley. And I came out here for a 3-week vacation, and that was, I think, in 1972, and I've been here ever since. I moved back there for a job for about 6 years, but as soon as that was over with, I came back here. And it was in California, in Burbank. I lived in the Valley and then went to Burbank. I guess Burbank's out of the Valley, but I lived in Burbank for a while, and that's when I went into Camarillo State Hospital. And I've already told you why I was there. And so I went in, and I was trying to get certified crazy. You know, I wanted to be paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies. Well, to me, that sounded more romantic than alcoholic, you know? Because you know what an alcoholic is. It's my dad, and I ain't never going to be like that, you know, like him. So, therefore, paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies. Now, when you're a bedwetter, dating is... it has issues, you know? Second dates are tough. I had one time. I had her convinced that it was her. And by the way, I as a result of that, I became a salesman. So, but anyways, I was in. But you know, to be paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies, again, it's not a more romantic than alcoholic, and. You know, can you imagine picking up girls saying, "Hi, I'm an alcoholic. Boom, get the hell out of here." But, "Hi, I'm paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies." Say, "Come over here, little boy. Let me fix you, you know." So anyways, I was trying that on, and they just told me, "No, Rick, you're just an alcoholic. Go back to the thing." And I went into therapy, and one of the therapists said, "What you need to do is you need to blame your alcoholism. You need to put the blame of your alcoholism where it belongs, with your parents." So go write this letter to your parents and blah, 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 blah. Now, I don't listen to everything, so I go home. I go to the dorm. I go to my cell. I'm in Camarillo State Hospital. Did I tell you that? Anyways, I go back to my... I don't have a room. I'm in a dorm. Anyways, I'm writing this letter, and I said, "Dear Mom, it's me, Rick. I know I haven't seen you in a couple of years. You know, I don't think I told her I left Massachusetts, you know. I know I haven't seen you in a couple of years, but I'm in Camarillo State Hospital, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's your fault." "And can you send me $25? So Monday we go back to therapy, and the guy says, take out your things and your letters. And I said, "Oh, I've already mailed mine." He said, "You did what? You mailed it?" That wasn't the part of the deal. So I guess it was a therapy thing. I don't know. So I don't know much about therapy, but so I mailed this letter, and in a couple of weeks I get it back. And this goes to the point where, why don't you leave me alone? Because I ain't hurting anybody, you know. Now my mom had 9 kids, right? She was 5 foot, a little French Canadian lady. I don't think she made it. I don't think she was 5 foot tall, and 100 pounds maybe. You know, married to my dad, an animal, had 9 kids, and one of them, and maybe I was the worst, I don't know, but there was a lot of us in there that weren't very good, you know, none of us are doctors or anything like that, you know, but I get this letter from my mom, and I could feel and see the tears in this thing, and she said, "Oh my God, Rick, if there's anything that I did to cause you this, you know, whatever it is, you got it." And I don't remember the words, I just remember the feelings. Mm-hmm. "So if you think that you're not hurting anybody with your drinking, think again." And there was a check in there for $50. And I thought, she could have sent 100. You know what I mean? That's really the kind of guy I am. So I came to AA for all the wrong reasons. So if you're here for the cookies, and by the way, I believe there's a girl here that makes cookies, and they're just like freaking amazing. I know probably half the room's here just for the cookies, and that's okay, because when people came in to the people with H&I here, anybody here with H&I? You ought to try it. You really ought to try it, because what you'll get is maybe somebody like me. There's a couple of you guys. Roger was here a couple of weeks ago. Roger, out of the prison. No? He said, "Tell him my name and he'll remember me." So. He was a speaker, yeah. a long time resident of California Men's Colony, and I've been going to California Men's Colony for a long, long time. Ever since I got out, because of the debt that I felt that I owed to Alcoholics Anonymous and H&I in particular, I felt that it would necessary. And I've never been to prison. I've been to jail a couple of times, but never to 10 days in L.A. County. That was the longest. And but never to prison. And when I went up there, you know, it's a you know where it is, right? It's right up the street here, and you know what it is. It's a freaking prison for lifers, for murderers and rapists and all kinds of things. And when I first was going there, I thought, oh, geez, I wonder what they're in for. And then they started telling me, and I thought, God, I don't want to know anymore, you know. And one of the things that I used to say before coming in here was, we might never get to the steps, but... One of the things that I used to say is that I was nothing but a punk before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I got to tell you, the first time I went to CMC, I was a little nervous, you know, and we had Italian food before, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to make it through this, and I'm just, you know, just telling my story. I don't know what, you know, I'm newly sober. I was 26, 27 years old, and I'm in there with all these lifers, and I said, you know what, before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was nothing but a punk. And in the back, this guy, and you know, big guy, and his eyes light up. And I thought, hey, you know, maybe he's listening. Maybe he can hear what I have to say. Maybe I'm gifted. Maybe I have a calling. You know, maybe this is going to be my mission. You know, I'm going to be the guy come in to preach to these convicts. And you know, I guess you don't have to be one to, you know, whatever. And I'm walking out, and the guys say that I was with. They said, hey, do you? And at the end of the meeting, this guy come up and he gave me one of those prison hugs. I'm thinking, hey, this is cool, man. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be. And on the way out, the guy says, hey, do you know what a punk is in prison? And then he told me, and I'd like to tell you that I've never been anything but a juvenile delinquent before coming in to Alcoholics Anonymous. But what's happened here is, and I still go there, I was up there last week, and Roger is one of those guys that was in there forever and ever and ever and ever. And he was there for 25 years. And one of the guys, another guy named Kenny, paroled down to my neck of the woods. And Kenny is a handyman. And he was in there for murder. And I knew him, or he knew me, before he went to prison. He was there for over 25 years. And he has the keys to my house, and you know, when something goes wrong, I say, hey, Kenny, there's something, you know, go fix it. And he knows how to get into my house, and he knows everything, and I don't have any, you know, I wouldn't say go give you keys to a murderer, but but Alcoholics Anonymous changed those guys. Okay, we got another 20 minutes. Can we get through the steps? Yeah, we can do it. It's real easy. It's Sunday night. I think that you could work the steps tonight. In the book, there's a story whose Dr. Bob was one of this guy's sponsor, and I believe the name of the story is, I don't know, in the new edition. I don't even know if it's in the new edition, but the last one. The story was he sold himself short, and he said we took 3 to 4 hours to thoroughly go through the then 6-step program. Okay, so in the beginning there was 6 steps, right? And now there's 12. And you know how that happened? Bill needed to write the book. And you know why? He needed money to keep the operation going. But he also didn't want the word to get, his words, he didn't want it to get twisted and garbled. Because they had gotten together, 100 people by that time, had gotten together and stayed sober. So they wanted to send this message to Des Moines or wherever, you know, to Los Angeles, because they were in the back east. And so he went home and wrote the book. In the beginning, there was 6 steps, right? And then Bill, and I heard this at a meeting, so I know it's true. Bill went home to write the book, and on the way home, he stopped at Starbucks, and he got a couple of ad shots in his pocket, because he was going to be up for a while. And he went home, and he wrote the book. If you had done the steps the day before, you only needed to do 6. The next day, you had to do 12. So I would suggest, while that you do the steps this weekend, because you know there's a group someplace, probably over in Visalia, trying to make this a 24-step program. So if you do it now, you only have to do 12. But the reality is that there's only three. Trust God, clean house, and work with others. That's all you got to do. I heard a guy say, if you're grateful, you won't get drunk. And that's a true statement. If you're grateful, you won't get drunk. But somebody new walking in here, how do you get grateful? Just get grateful. Just turn it over. Oh, okay. Thank you. So what happens, if you were broken, if you were as nearly as broken as me when I came in here, then I needed to do this in bits, you know? And now I know the first three steps fairly well. As a matter of fact, I do a workshop. I do it once a year. We're in the middle of it right now. We just started the fourth step. It's 12 weeks. It's in Ventura. And if you're in the area on Thursday night, stop by. And I'll show you how to do the three steps. Because I'm the kind of guy that wants you to do them, right? I'm not going to make it so difficult that you can't. I don't want to make it such an intellectual process that you think, oh my God. Anything like me, again, did I tell you I went to high school for 4 years, quit my sophomore year? I don't know how to spell. I'm a horrible speller. My penmanship sucks. And I don't want to do. You want me to write this thing? And I go to a meeting and a guy says, I've been writing my whole life story in a fourth step, and I've got 75 pages done. And I'm about halfway through. And it's only taken me 6 months. And I think, oh my God, why don't you just, I want to give him a gun. You know, it's like going to the dentist and saying, hey, see this one right here? It hurts really bad, but don't take it all out tonight. You got a headache? Here's the aspirin, but don't take them all at once. We'll cut them in half and maybe we'll snort them, huh? Yeah, you know. The fourth step is what we got here in the first three steps. First step's already done, right? I think when you get here, except for the admitting part, right? Because we come here, you know, in on our bike, yeah. Or, you know, or driving a car with a thing with an ankle bracelet and and we pop in here and says, who's alcoholic? My hand ain't going up. I ain't alcoholic. Because you got a drunk driving, does that make you an alcoholic? Absolutely not. You know, so you got drunk and you pulled your pants down and peed in the pool at your boss's house. Does that make you an alcoholic? No, it makes you a guy looking for a job, you know? But an alcoholic, basically, you know, and you know what? It says, I've heard it said that we can't tell if you're an alcoholic or not. You know, what do you think, we're stupid? Of course we can tell. I mean, we can smell an alcoholic. You know what I mean? If there's somebody sitting next to you, and this ain't a dig, because if you're here for any reason at all, especially the people with the court cards, right? The people with the court cards, you know what I say to you people? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome home. Because if they checked my intentions when I got here, I came for the filtered tip cigarettes, the caffeinated coffee, and the cookies. And what I thought was the smell of non-crazy perfume. That's what I thought. But that's another whole thing, right? So that's why I came to Alcoholics. I didn't want to stay. So, but I'm also a liar, cheat, and a thief. So what do you want me to say? I'm an alcoholic? Yeah. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. I'm going to vote for that guy. Whatever. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter, because I'm here for the cookies. And this is probably the best meeting around. They weren't like these cookies. Anyways. So you don't have to have pure motives, right? Just welcome. Just be here, right? Just be here. And some of it will come by osmosis. A lot of it is going to come from really hard work. Because everybody who walks in the door, we give them the gift. Here's the gift. Here's your life. Here's your life. You get another chance. And some of you have been back and back and back and back. And you know what? Every time you walk through that freaking door, we're going to give you the same gift, which is your life. And all you got to do is take care of it. This is one way. Anybody can do these steps up here. Anybody can do these steps and benefit from it. Step one. I think all the work for step one was done before you got here. This is the most expensive, exclusive club in the world. And the fact that you got here... You may have, some of us have paid the ultimate price. We know, we all know people who have done that, who have died from this disease. So the price has already been paid. But what I tell people is, hey, you know, it's Sunday night. What a beautiful day. I know there's a fire up here, but it made the sun look outrageous, you know. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. You could be anywhere. Hell, you could be in Napomo in minutes. But you're in Santa Maria in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Just admit it. It's all you got to do. Stop the fire. Just admit it. Yeah, I'm here. And that my life is unmanageable. I go back to what I just said. You're in an AA meeting. Non-alcoholics, there may be some non-alcoholics in here. Al-Anons, welcome. And non-alcoholics, just people here with significant others or whatever. But besides that, nobody else comes to AA to find out if they're alcoholics or not, other than alcoholics. It just doesn't happen. You know? I've got some bad examples there. I'll just leave them on the table. Admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. That's already happened. And all you got to do is admit it. Yeah, look at me. I'm in a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, for Christ's sakes. In Santa Maria. How the hell did I get in Santa Maria, for Christ's sake? I'm going to go back to Oxnard, you know, where you bring the strawberries. Anyways, and then came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. I've heard it said this way, I came to, and I came to believe. A power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Does that mean that I'm not going to be paranoid schizophrenic anymore? No. What the insanity that they're talking about is that the fact that you think that this time it's going to be different. This time I'm going to get away with it. This time I'm going to get relief that's going to last longer than the last time. This time I'm going to do it, I'm not going to wet my pants or smash up my car. Because I've never had blue vodka. Or whatever the reason. In the book, there's a story about a guy named Jim who went to work at a place that he used to own, a car lot. And he said he went to work on Tuesday. They didn't bring up Monday at all. He said he went to work on Tuesday, and he had a little bit of riff with the then owner. And so he thought, I'm going to go out into the country to sell some cars. You know how well that works. So he went to Guadalupe. And he stopped and he got a burrito. And he thought, well, maybe I'll see somebody in there who wants to buy a car. You know how that, well, door-to-door car sales goes, you know? So he had his burrito, and then he thought, a shot of whiskey on a full stomach couldn't hurt me, especially if I put it in milk. Now, there's a couple of crazy things in that sentence. But he says, I realized I was being none too smart. But he did it, and he drank it, and nothing happened. And that's what happens when you drink, nothing. You just drink, and you get away with it. Oh, what the hell was I thinking? I was thinking putting way too much effort on that. He says, I realized I was being none too smart. And that was the crazy thought that it wouldn't hurt him this time after he just lost everything. And now he's back in fighting for it, and he's taking it just one more, because on a full stomach and a glass of milk, whatever, whatever, whatever. That's the insanity that they're talking about there. So came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore sanity. First step, there's nothing to do. There's really nothing to do except for admit. And how long does it take you to admit? I saw a picture of me when I was about 20 years old, and I was holding a baby like this, and my hair was like this. And I looked at that picture and I said, oh my God, I'm bald. I admitted it right then. Didn't change the facts. I mean, I was bald. And anyway, so I've lived with it ever since. So I just saw the picture and it, for whatever reason, I was okay. No, I wasn't okay with it, but I was done. They won't be able to see that on the tape. So step three, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. Because step three is there's nothing to do there except make a decision. Did you have anybody, you know, have a couple of restaurants that they were going to eat at before they got here? And then you finally made a decision. How long did it take? It's instantaneous. So step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Our will and our lives, our thoughts and our actions over to the care of God. If you're sitting in an AA meeting, you've kind of already done that. Because you, and I don't know about you, but the only God that I knew when I got here was God damn it. But I did know that Alcoholics Anonymous, the group. So when you said God, I heard group, and it pulled me through. Step four. Now there's the one, right? People say, whoa, watch out for step four. Whoa, watch out for step four. Why don't you wait a while for step four? I would tell you to watch out for the people who tell you to watch out for step four, because that's the medicine that we have here. And it's not that hard. It really isn't that hard. You don't have to write. In the book, it says to write an outline. And it says this. It says this. Write down who you're mad at. Is there anybody here who doesn't know who they're mad at? Do you know who you're mad at? If you know who you're mad at, do you know what they did? That's all they're asking you to do, is right now we're taking their inventory. That son of a bitch, you know, and you write that down and what they did, and what does it affect? By now, you really need to have a sponsor. Because it gets a little bit more difficult. But it's not impossible. It's actually very doable, and the results are amazing. In the ninth step, it has these promises. If you're painstaking about this phase of your development, you're going to be amazed before you're halfway through. You're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Not that you've never been free or happy before, but we're going to show you stuff you've never seen before. So a lot of people get concerned about the stuff that they, in step four, they want to make sure that they do it right. By the way, you ain't going to do it right, so I'll give you the permission to do it wrong. And you're not going to understand it. Don't wait till you understand it, because you ain't going to understand it until you do it. And people say, well, what about the stuff I don't remember? I tell them, just don't write that stuff down. There's two other things they ask you to look at. They ask you to look at fear, and they ask you to look at sex and sex relationships. And so you put all those things together, and then you take that stuff and you share it with your sponsor. The good news is about step six is that there's nothing to do. There's no action words there. If you conjugate the verbs and put it in first person present tense, it says this. It says, I am ready to have God remove all these defects of character. People say, well, what if I'm not? And I say, well, then you have to go back. How far? I don't know. You know, it's up to you. It's where your thing is. But when you can get to that point, then you can take step seven, which is humbly ask God to remove these, you know, these defects of character. And then eight says we made a list. And then in the book, it says we've already got the list. And then it says that we make amends to those people that we've harmed. Amends is not the plural of amend, which is to change. Amends means reparations, you know, to pay back. And it's not about people that you don't like. You don't go, hey, I've never liked you. I thought you were a pompous ass, but now I'm getting closer to God, and I'm sorry you were a pompous ass. It's not about that. But if I stole $100 from you, guess what? I owe $100. If I broke your window, I owe you a window. You know, and it's not about people you don't like. It's about people that you hurt. One of the things that my dad was my first big resentment, you know, and he was a man and I was a boy and I couldn't do anything to him, but I could break the windows in your car. And that's what I did. And so as a result of the resentment towards my dad, I owed you an amends because I broke the antenna of your car. Step 10 says we continue to take personal inventory. So we've just done what we do up to that point. We just get it done, and now the maintenance steps, 10, 11, and 12. So 10, we continue to do what we've done, and 12, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. And what's the message? I think the message is that AA works through a set of spiritual principles. That's what I think. And hopefully I can convey that message. And the rest of it is to practice these principles in all our affairs, and that's the tough one. I have trouble with that. Some of you who are awake and not realize that I skipped over step 11, and for me, the reason why I do this is because I like to end with step 11, because I think in my life, in my, you know, journey in sobriety, it's the most important. And it's sought through prayer and meditation. Prayer, talking to God. Meditation, listening. You know, we have one mouth and two ears. I think we should meditate more than we talk. More than we pray, at least. And I heard a guy say that everybody should meditate for at least a half an hour every day. And I know some of us are busy. And you don't get a chance to do that. And he told me, for those of you who are too busy to meditate for half an hour a day, you need to meditate for an hour a day. But I'm here to tell you, that was a wise man. But I'm a guy from AA. I'm here to tell you, if you meditate 1 minute a day, or one breath a day, That's a start. And you can meditate by ironing clothes, washing dishes, washing windows. And if that appeals to you, my address is 1032. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. The fact that I'm even thinking about God. Praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. I really want to thank Vicki and Kristen, the cookie maker, for having me up here tonight. I apologize to all of you, but I want to end with this. It's really, Alcoholics Anonymous is near and dear to my heart. And like a friend of mine says, what do I owe you? You know, you want me to come to Santa Maria on a Saturday night? You know, I'm here. I'll do it, you know. But I want to end with this prayer, and I have this on a card. If you'd like it, I'll give it to you as well after the meeting for a quarter. I usually get at least a buck afterwards, so no, it's a joke. It really is a joke. They're 50 cents. But it's called The Right Path, and it says, Dear God, I have no idea where I'm going, as I do not see the road ahead of me, and I do not know for sure where it will end. Nor do I really know myself that I'm following your will, and the fact that I think that I'm following your will doesn't mean that I'm actually doing so. However, I believe this. I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in everything that I do. I hope I never persist in anything apart from that desire. I also believe that if I do this, that you will lead me down the right road, though I may know nothing about it at the time. Therefore, I will trust you always, and though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not be afraid, because I know that you will not leave me to face my troubles alone. Thank you.